truth be told, or your bullshit getting old. The world is getting cold. Don't nobody owe you nothing, so quit fronting. Nothing wrong with being honest. It's a lot of broken promises. Truth be told, we could communicate without all the gun violence. All it took was one conversation. It'll prevent a whole lot of altercation.
Hello there, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Truth Be Told. I'm your host, as always, James C. Turner, Jr. And before I introduce my guests here, I want to wish everyone out there well. I want you all to stay safe and not panic. Everything's going to get taken care of, this coronavirus. Well, you know, we're off that, aren't we? All right, now today I've got a very special guest. He was on A&E's 60 Days in the first season. He went by Zach Holland, but his real name is Zach Baker. Zach, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, I'm glad to get you on the show. I know our wires got crossed up a few times there.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, life is life, man.
All right, well, first things first, man. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your background in regards to, you know, where were you raised and, like, schooling and stuff like that.
So I was born and raised in Tennessee, and a little bit in North Mississippi, but mostly West Tennessee. Small towns, like one red light, most of them. Grew up in a preacher's home. My dad was a preacher my whole life, still is. So we moved around quite a bit when I was growing up. But one thing I learned from my parents is serving others. That's one thing that was a big thing with them. My mom worked for the state of Tennessee in the Criminal Investigation Division. Her father, my grandfather, was in law enforcement for 25 plus years. He was a county sheriff for a little while and then highway patrol. You know, it's something that's run in my family is serving others. You know, with my dad being a preacher, that was literally what he did. And his dad was a preacher. And they weren't like the Joel Osteen type preachers. They were the preachers that would sacrifice their paycheck to make sure that the people in their church are fed, that kind of deal. So I grew up watching that, and you know, it really taught me the value of serving others and taking care of others and doing your best to help others. And while we were growing up, my parents always either had foster kids that we had with us, or they worked at a children's home for orphans and abused and abandoned kids for about 3 years. So, you know, I had to share my parents with kids who didn't have any parents for a lot of the time, but it definitely taught me the value of, you know, just helping other people.
Now, you spent some time in the military. How did that come about?
So actually, when I was a senior in high school, I was 17, and I had filled out all the paperwork and done the ASVAB and everything and was ready to join while I was still a senior in high school. But because I was only 17, I had to wait on my mother's signature, and that was 2003. So Afghanistan had been going on for a little while, and we had just started in Iraq, and my mom basically said, no, I'm not going to do that. So she wouldn't sign. And I had some grants and stuff and scholarships for college. So she wanted me to, you know, utilize that and go to school. So I went, but I'd always growing up, I'd always seen my grandfather. He had already, you know, retired by the time I remember anything, but he served in the Army in World War II in the Army Air Corps. And then, like I said, he was in law enforcement for 25 plus years. So I always had that desire to serve. And, I went to school for about 4 years, went to college for about 4 years, and was kind of just dragging my feet because I was working full time while I was going to school and just wasn't cutting it. My grades were slipping, and I was old enough finally. And I'd taken a couple of years off from school, and I was like, you know what? I've been talking about it. I'd planned on doing it years ago. Might as well do it now. And so I went and I actually called the recruiter and said, hey, I was wanting to talk to you about joining the Marine Corps. And he's like, well, he's like, I see you've got like 4 years of college. Why don't you go ahead and go to the OCS program, the officer selection program, go ahead and finish your degree and then come in. And so I got off the phone with him and was like, well, that wasn't what I wanted. So I went to the recruiting office, walked in the door and said, hey, I want to join. And he was like, when? And I was like, today. And so that was on February 2nd of 2009. And a week later, I was standing on the yellow footprints at Parris Island, South Carolina. I'd signed up and everything. And so that was, or no, that was, actually, no, I got that timeline wrong. Sorry. Cut that. It's, it was February, it was February 14th that I signed up because I, Ashley and I had just started dating a couple months before. And that was her, our first Valentine's together was me telling her that I was joining the Marine Corps and I'd already signed up. And then originally I was scheduled to ship in the summer, but it was 2 weeks. 2 weeks after I joined, they had me down in Parris Island. I was like just a little over 2 weeks later, I was in Parris Island on March 9th.
Okay, so you end up getting booked for 60 days in the first season. Now, did you approach them or did they approach you? How did that all come about?
So they contacted me. I had been on some discussion boards and forums online. And with me being prior law enforcement, you know, after deploying to Afghanistan, I came back and was back in the civilian sector, and law enforcement seemed like a natural fit for me with my family history and military background. So I'd been Nevada Highway Patrol. And so when they started looking for participants for the show, they were looking for people that they thought could do well. And with me being prior law enforcement, but not currently in law enforcement, they figured I would be able to, you know, get the time off work, but easier than if I were a cop. And with my military background, you know, it looked attractive to them as well. So, like I said, they found me on some boards online, some discussion boards and stuff, and contacted me, said, hey, we've got an opportunity. Would you be interested? And started chatting with me about it. And one thing led to another.
Now, was the way the show was pitched to you the same as how it ended up playing out?
No, actually, when it was originally pitched, it was just going to be a documentary, like a one episode documentary, maybe a couple hours long. Originally it was supposed to be on like National Geographic or something like that. But when the production company started pitching the show to networks, it, you know, took on a life of its own and got way bigger than what they had originally intended, which was fine for them because it was, you know, more money, more, a better quality of production and everything else. So that's how that ended up.
Did you meet any of the other contestants on the show beforehand?
The only other participants I met beforehand were Tammy and Robert. And that's because the three of us went through our training session together. And I will note that during our training session and shortly thereafter, Tammy and I both together approached the production crew and said, hey, make sure you do not put us in that jail at the same time that you put that whack job in, because we do not want to be associated with him coming in off the bat, because Robert was already showing his colors just in the training sessions.
Oh, so he wasn't playing that up for TV. That was him.
That was him. In all honesty, he's a little weirder in person than he was shown on TV. And I'll rephrase that. Not that he was weird. He was a little more different than what he was shown on TV, to be politically correct.
And yeah, I was curious because he was like the first one to go and start, you know, bad mouthing everyone. That's why I thought maybe he was playing up to the TV.
No, he's just that way.
Now, with your background, you know, military, do you feel like it was easier for you to fit in? Why or why not?
Yeah, absolutely. It was easier to fit in because in the military, you get used to adapting to your surroundings, adapting to being a whole brand new group of people. You know, you you go to boot camp for 3 months, you're stuck in a squad bay with 80 to 90 guys. And you're literally like, your bunks are 3 feet apart and you're in bunks. So you've got on three different sides, you got a guy 3 feet away at all times. So you get used to being in close quarters and adapting to whatever your situation is. And then obviously going through training and going through combat, you just learn how to deal with it. So yeah, that definitely helped. And if you watch the, you know, the show on every season, as a general rule, the guys who are prior service are the ones that did the best. Myself on season one, Ryan on season two, you know, he had a military background. Nate on seasons three and four, which it's funny, with Nate being a Marine, we had never met each other, didn't have a clue who each other were until the show. But then after season three came out and Nate was, you know, revealed to be a part of the show, we connected and we had a mutual friend. And I was like, how do you know Hughes? Because this guy that we knew had been my squad leader for a short time. And Nate was like, oh, well, I was his squad leader back in the day. So like, we were that closely connected through the Marine Corps. It was literally 1 degree of separation, which was just kind of cool and kind of crazy. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the show as a whole, every season, the guys who were prior service tend to do better than the ones who weren't.
Yeah, that's so true when you look at it. And shout out Nate, by the way. Congrats on the marriage, buddy.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, question, I've always wanted to know, how clean were the jails, especially Clark County? You know, was it well maintained in there?
So it was as well maintained as it could be on the budget that they had. When we got in there, the jail was already horrifically understaffed because they don't have the budget. They didn't have the budget to fund enough COs, and they didn't even have enough money to pay to have people come and watch the jail. So of course they didn't have enough money to, you know, keep it in the shape that it should be, which is one of the reasons that the sheriff was willing to do the show and willing to be a part of it, was because he was the part of his deal was the production company installed all these brand new cameras and this brand new security system, camera system, that would have been close to $1 million if he'd have tried to fund it himself. They put it in as part of the production and said, hey, after the show, the camera is the jail's to keep to use for their security system. So that's the jail itself, it was as clean as it could be under the circumstances.
Did you feel like the crew could get to you guys quick enough to say you guys were ever in a real dangerous situation?
It's kind of a mixed bag. And they told us that going in. They said, hey, look, we'll get you out as quick as we can. We'll get to you as quick as we can. But you're pretty much on your own in there. Like, you've got to deal with it. You're going to have to deal with it for anywhere from 30 minutes to 2 hours, depending. So just, you know, keep your head on a swivel and be ready to defend yourself if you need to. And that's kind of the mentality I had going in. I went in thinking there's nobody else. It's only me.
You kind of have to in that situation. Survival.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, do you think the show has gone downhill over the past few seasons? Like, do you think the direction of the show has changed from what it originally was supposed to?
I don't think the show itself changed direction. I think the production company and the producers and all the people behind the show definitely are still trying to do what they originally set out to do. I do feel like, though, because of the notoriety that the show has gained and how many seasons it's been in now. I mean, it's what, seven or eight seasons now, or six or yeah, seven seasons. Yeah, so technically with the one outside and inside season. But yeah, I mean, you know, the show has gotten so much notoriety and was so popular for the first couple seasons that people know about it. So a lot of the people that are getting on the show now are not going into it with the same mentality and the same goals that those of us in the first couple seasons had. I feel personally, I feel like a lot of the newer people are more geared towards getting their 15 minutes of fame or just trying to make a name for themselves. I'm not saying all of them are, but just watching the little bit that I've watched the following seasons, a lot of them are, you know, they have a different aim and a different purpose for their time on the show than those of us in the first couple seasons did.
Speaking of that, what is one positive that you took away from this experience?
Yeah, honestly, I mean, you can't go through an experience like this without it changing your life. It opens your eyes to a lot of things that you may not have been aware of before, you may not have ever thought about before. It's definitely something that, you know, it changed my perspective a little bit about jails and people who are in the jails. You know, there's a lot of people in there that are genuinely not bad people. They just made a mistake. And yeah, you've got your perennial offenders that have been in 30 plus times. And then you've got people who literally screwed up one time or got caught one time making a bad mistake and wind up there, you know, for months up to years. And there's even one of the guys that was in my pod that I am still in contact with to this day. He made a bad mistake. Just happened to, you know, partied the wrong way at the wrong time and wound up in jail. He was there for a couple of years, but he's since turned his life around and he's married and successful businessman, you know, since the show aired. Not that the show had anything to do with his success, but since he's gotten out of jail, he's a successful businessman. He owns a successful company. And he's doing extremely well for himself. You know, he took the opportunity that was given to him and said, hey, you know what? I'm not going to be a product of those circumstances. I'm going to turn around and make something better out of it. So that's one of the perspectives that I gained from being in jail, was that there are people that do allow the system to do what it's supposed to do and allow them to make a change for the better.
And, you know, that kind of leads me into my next question. You know, how edited was the show? Because a few other guys I have had on and talked to said that, you know, they had filmed a lot more material that never even ended up on any of the seasons they were on.
Yeah, so definitely there was a lot of material that was filmed that just never ended up on air. And I think that's, you know, the production company, when you think about it, they're getting literally 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of footage of us. And it's going on for, you know, 8+ weeks. And they've got to condense that down to 14 one-hour episodes. And they can't just focus on one person the entire time. They've got 6 to 9 participants throughout. So they've got to focus on everybody's different storylines. So you try to condense that down to 1 hour a week, and you've got to make space for the ad time. So you're looking at 48 minutes roughly per week for, you know, 7 people. And you've got 7 people of 24 hours a day for 8 weeks straight. So it's, I can understand completely that they had to edit out a lot of the stuff, and they had to focus on, you know, what would make the show the most interesting. Because yes, they were trying to accomplish something, but at the end of the day, they were filming a TV show. So they had to get the airplay and the airtime and had to get the viewers. So people like drama. So if we can edit it to make it look more dramatic, then why not? So they weren't able to contrive any of the situations that we were in. At the end of the day, like, everything that happened just happened, and they were just filming it. But they were able to cut and paste and edit scenes to make things flow according to a timeline. That's not to say that they were dishonest with it at all. It's just they were able to present it in the way that they wanted it to be presented.
Were you hesitant to let your wife, Ashley, participate on the show, or did you feel like it was a good experience for her, or would be a good experience for her?
So, to be completely honest, I had absolutely no, you know, no say in that whatsoever, really. I mean, they contacted her while I was in jail. She went into jail 10 days after I got out. So everything was already signed and finalized before I even got out of jail, and I couldn't talk about it while I was in jail because I was in jail and every phone call I had was being listened to. So we didn't really have the opportunity to discuss it. But at the end of the day, even if I had had the opportunity to discuss it with her, how am I going to turn around after I just went through 2 months and she had to go through that? How am I going to turn around and say no? So whether or not I thought it was a good experience for her or something that I wanted her to do, I'm not going to tell her no, because she's a grown woman. She makes her own decisions.
I love that answer. You all hear that out there? That's how a real man answers a question like that. I love that, man.
Thanks.
Now, was it hard to transition back into civilian life afterwards? I'd imagine it would be a little bit, right?
I mean, somewhat, but not really for me. Simply because I had the prior experience of the military lifestyle, because transitioning back to a civilian life from military life, it's basically the same type of transition as transitioning from jail to civilian life. You know, you had been in a routine where everybody tells you where you're going to be and when you're going to be there and what you're going to do for so long in the military, and then you go to, you're on your own and you have to make all your own decisions and have your own free time. And that's kind of how it was in jail, only jail is significantly less structured than the military. You know, the only structure really in jail is lights out is at 10 o'clock and, you know, meals are at certain times of the day. But other than that, your time is your own. Yeah, you're stuck in a room or a building, but at the jail that I was in, there wasn't a whole lot of structure. And that's because by law, they aren't really allowed to put a whole lot of structure on you, because, you know, the people that are in jail generally haven't been convicted yet. They're holding, awaiting trial. So you can't punish them. You can't make them do things. You can't say, hey, you have to go here and work. You have to go here and do this, because that would be considered punishment, I guess. So because of the way the judicial system works and the incarceration system works, they can't really tell you what to do or what not to do. So there's a lot less structure in the jail system. So it was easier to transition back to being outside from jail than it was to transition back from being in the military or being deployed.
Now, I know at the end they let you guys, you know, relate how the experience was to them. Since you have done that, have you seen Clark County do anything to implement any kind of changes or anything you guys had recommended?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. Sheriff Noel was very, you know, very much open to, how can I make this jail better? How can I make it better for the inmates? How can I make a more positive impact on people's lives? And one of the things that he did was he took, you know, all the people that got out, said, hey, there needs to be a system in place to help people reacclimate to civilian society. And so he set up a system where anybody who goes to Clark County Jail now, when they get released, they get a a book of knowledge, basically a pamphlet, what have you, that connects them to resources on how to reacclimate to civilian life and, you know, programs that are available for them to try to get them readjusted back to being a productive member of society. So that's one of the main things that he did. But you know, they implemented quite a bit, and I won't go into all the details, but he definitely was very open and very receptive to any advice and any knowledge that we were able to pass along to him.
Now, what have you been up to since the whole thing?
Me personally, just, you know, living life, raising two boys, trying to be a good husband, a good father, trying to get back into law enforcement. I've had a few different job offers and opportunities, but because of one thing or another, those jobs didn't pan out. So I currently work at a gun range, actually. It's a veteran-owned, veteran-operated gun range, and everybody that works there is prior service, so it kind of just fits naturally for me. But, I mean, the biggest thing that's kept me from getting back into law enforcement is I'm colorblind, and I can't pass a color vision test, which has been a disqualifier for four different departments now.
Jeez.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's something that I had no control over, literally.
Is that something, you know, is there something that you can do, like a special kind of glasses or something that they, you think?
No, so they do have glasses that are supposed to help you see colors better. They don't work for me. And even it says on the box when they get the glasses, because I've tried them, even says on the box, these glasses will not help everyone. And they don't help me, but even if they did, law enforcement agencies do not allow you to use props or whatever, or glasses or anything like that to help you pass any of the vision tests. You have to take the vision test exactly like normal, and then as long as your vision can be corrected to 20/20, they'll accept that. But the color vision is a disqualifier across the board for the majority of law enforcement agencies in the nation.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, man, like, you know, don't give up on that, because, you know, with the way technology is, man, they keep coming up with new and different things every day. So yeah, there's a possibility that change for sure.
Absolutely. I'm waiting on it. There's a husband and wife doctor team that are currently working on, and they've started tests on how they can alter, because the basically what causes color vision is the rods and cones in your eyes are shaped a little differently, so it changes your perception of the light reflected, and that's how you see color. And colorblind people, their rods and cones aren't shaped the same way, but they've been working on monkeys, because monkeys are colorblind, and they've been able to have some successful tests on changing the shape of the rods and cones in the monkey's eyes to where they can distinguish colors and differentiate properly. So it's in the developmental stage, but it's, unless you're colorblind, it doesn't matter to you. So it's
right.
It's a slow process.
I hear you. Small number of people looking at that.
Exactly.
Well, Zach, man, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. It was such a pleasure to have you on. At this time, I usually have my guests, you know, tell everyone where they can get a hold of them at, you know, social media, if you so choose to.
Sure. Absolutely. I just want to say thanks for having me on the show. Look forward to hearing it. And my social media handles, and my biggest, I don't really do anything other than Instagram, really. But my Instagram handles, I've got two accounts. One is just me scaring my wife. And that's all I do on that entire channel. And so if you want a good laugh, go check it out. It's at Unashamedly Scared. And then my personal channel is focused more on me and just different aspects of my life is at Whiskey Tango Foxtrot Zulu. And if you are, you know, if you know the phonetic alphabet, you'll get what that means. But that's my two handles.
Thank you again so much, Zach. And of course, I'm James C. Turner Jr. on IG and at JPsAllDay1990 on Twitter. Thank you all so much for listening and see you all next week.
Thanks a lot.
Nothing but positive vibes all day. Grinding, trying to make a better way. Better listen to what the songs say. Truth be told, you better slow your roll. I've been on the same road before. You know I'm the chosen one. I spit flows from the brain. Young G1.